The next case is number 033193, the United States against James Hank. Mr. York.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Ethan York, and along with John Meyer and Timothy O'Connor, we represent the appellant in this matter, James Hank. In April 2003, Mr. Hank pled guilty to conspiring to import narcotics into the United States and currently is serving a 78-month prison term. This direct appeal regards two issues pertaining to the district court's sentence of Mr. Hank. Specifically, first, whether the district court's imposition of a three-point enhancement under Section 3B1.1b for acting as a manager or supervisor of criminal activity was clearly erroneous. And second, whether the district court committed plain error in leaving all discretion to the United States probation officer regarding the number of tests to which Mr. Hank must submit during supervised release, or whether to, alternatively, whether he shall participate in a drug aftercare treatment program. Addressing the first issue, I would respectfully submit that the district court's imposition of a leadership enhancement in this case is not supported by the record. Therefore, Mr. Hank requests that this court reverse that portion of his sentence and remand the case with instructions to sentence Mr. Hank without any Section 3B1.1 enhancement. This court has adopted the seven factors listed in Note 4 to the commentary to Section 3B1.1 as a guide in determining whether or not an enhancement is warranted. Under the record facts in this case, and under those factors, it is clear that the conspiracy in this case included one leader, one person who exercised the requisite real and direct influence over another participant and who otherwise satisfies the 3B1.1 criteria. That person was not our client, James Hank, but rather Jonathan Blake. Although this court has said the seven factors are simply a guide to the district court, this court has also made clear that to assign an elevated degree of responsibility for criminal conduct under Section 3B1.1b, it must be shown, at a minimum, that the defendant had some real and direct influence over another participant in the criminal activity. Here, Mr. Hank did not exercise what this court has found to be the key element of control. The district court based its finding that Mr. Hank exercised control over the two carriers involved in this conspiracy, Jared Palagi and Mary Elizabeth Warner, in the court's word, to a certain extent. However, the record facts show that all control from beginning to end of this conspiracy was exercised alone by Jonathan Blake. Blake recruited the carriers. Blake made the agreement with the carriers. Blake directed these two carriers to go to Amsterdam, when to go, how to get there, what to do once they got there, and most importantly, to return to the United States with their narcotics. This included giving them money for airfare, directing them to a co-defendant, Justin Enders, to obtain more money, and to give them money for drugs. This included telling them where to stay, who to contact, and most importantly, to end the conspiracy by obtaining the drugs from Mr. Hank and returning to the United States. In short, Blake controlled the actions of Palagi and Warner from the beginning to what he envisioned the conspiracy's end to be. This control was directed alone in the United States by Mr. Blake, and what happened afterwards was a purely ministerial follow-through of what Mr. Blake ordered. Contrary to this clear record of Blake's activity and control, Hank's activities to which the district court pointed to rely to make a finding of control pale and show the lack of control. This is illustrated by, first, the court relying on that Mr. Hank received additional funds from the United States to purchase the drugs. However, the record supports that Mr. Hank had to ask the couriers whether or not they would receive additional funds via wire transfer. He did not direct them to do so, and indeed had to offer them incentive, additional money to do that. These are not actions of somebody with control. Hank's also lack of control is illustrated by the fact that contrary to what the government focuses on, or one point the government focuses on to display control, that Mr. Hank went and got the drugs himself, actually militates against the finding of control. This isn't a case where Mr. Hank said to the two carriers, Pelagi and Warner, I want you to go get the drugs, therefore securing myself from apprehension, or even that I want you to accompany me to go get the drugs, therefore being a lookout or otherwise helping me secure apprehension. What Mr. Hank did is he acted on his own as a distributor to this conspiracy, which this court has plainly found does not have the indicia of control to justify the enhancement in this case. The other factors to which the district court relied to find control are also not indicative of control under Section 3B1.1. Specifically, the court focused on the fact that Mr. Hank aided the two couriers in taping the narcotics to their legs. This simply is not control, but rather a ministerial follow-through, again, on Mr. Hank's role as a distributor to this conspiracy. Also, the district court and the government focuses on the point that Mr. Hank offered them assistance in returning to the United States. Again, these two couriers arrived in the United States at the direction of Mr. Blake. They intended to return under his direction. Mr. Hank's aid to them simply is not the type of control that this court has found to be indicia of leadership or control. The biggest point that the district court relied upon, and the one point of direction which the record supports, is that Mr. Hank directed the two couriers to, upon returning to the United States, to turn a portion of the drugs over to Justin Enders and keep a portion for himself. The record is clear that this is the only portion of any direction which they gave to him. Again, this is not inconsistent with his role as a supplier. Mr. Hank, there is no record evidence of how much Mr. Enders was to get and how much Mr. Blake was going to get, but simply as Mr. Hank said in his version of the offense, that this was going to be his payment for his role as a distributor in the conspiracy. And although the court and the government focus upon this, if, even if this court were to find that this was an instance of control, as this court has said in Mankiewicz and Brown, an isolated instance of giving direction is not sufficient to justify an enhancement under Section 3B1.1. As the court said, this is simply not the real and direct influence necessary to constitute control. Not only was it clearly erroneous for the district court to find that there was control exercised by Mr. Hank, but also the other six factors are not as met as well. Specifically, the record is absolutely clear that it was Blake, not Hank, who recruited the couriers, Pelagi and Warner. Both the pre-sentence report and the plea agreement state that Pelagi and Warner were recruited by Blake. The district court did point out that it was Mr. Hank who initially approached Ms. Warner in the fall of 1996 regarding being a courier. But it is also clear that at that time she dismissed this as a stupid idea. And subsequently, in an unconnected recruitment, Mr. Blake not only recruited Pelagi and Warner to do so, but to be a courier, but was successful in doing so. There was absolutely no connection between Mr. Hank's suggestion to Ms. Warner and the ultimate recruitment. As I said, Mr. Hank acted simply as a supplier or distributor to this conspiracy. As this court instructed in Pagan, it is not sufficient to, being a supplier is not sufficient to warrant a Section 3B1.1 enhancement. Further, Must Read instructs that a distributor may exercise total and complete decision-making authority regarding the aspects of his distribution without playing an aggravated role in the offense. I submit that that is all that Mr. Hank did here. Addressing the second issue, the district court committed plain error when at sentencing it ordered as a special condition of Mr. Hank's supervised release that he participate in drug aftercare treatment program, which may include urine testing, at the direction of the probation officer. This court has held that Title 18 U.S.C. Section 3583D requires the court, not the probation officer, to determine the number of drug tests to which the defendant must submit. The government says in their response brief that the actual at the direction of language referred to drug aftercare treatment. We would say that the plain language of the district court makes clear that that the judge was referring not to drug aftercare treatment, but to the number of urine testing. Even if the district court...
There was no objection to that at the district court, correct?
That is correct.
So why can't the district court just assume that that's accepted rather than get into all this business?
Well, Your Honor, because although it wasn't objected to, this is not a waiver issue, but rather that we forfeited. Therefore, it is subject to the plain error standard. And although it wasn't raised,
it's also subject to the common sense standard, too. He imposes this rather mild condition, and there's no objection to it. If there had been an objection, then you would have hashed it all out, and maybe the judge would have made some more specific findings. That's the problem we get in a case like this, where there isn't an objection, and you want us to undo or send back to the district court to redo something that will probably end up with the same result.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the district court's language, although subtle, we had an opportunity once we received the transcript to see the subtle plain error that the district court committed. We saw that there is a certain ambiguity whether or not the district court was leaving to the discretion of the probation officer whether to direct urine testing, which under 3583D is impermissible. So looking at that, at this point, Mr. Hanks' rights could be affected because on supervised release, the way we read the district court's opinion, could be subject to as many or as few urine tests as the probation office requests. And that is not permitted under Section 3583D. I see my time is up. If there are any other questions, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. York. We'll hear now from Ms. Murphy.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. Good morning. My name is Madeline Murphy. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I am asking this court to affirm the district court's decision to award a 3-level enhancement for leadership because the activities of James Hank did, in fact, exercise enough quote-unquote control to meet the criteria of the section of the guidelines. The defense is correct in that the key inquiry here is control, but the key inquiry here is not necessarily control to an absolute degree. The Seventh Circuit case law has found on many occasions that though control is a key, it is not the only factor, and control need not be absolute. In fact, the court has found that the underlings need not play marionette to a defendant's puppeteer, and that it is enough that a particular defendant has organized or in some way directed an underling. And that is what has happened here. It is very true that there was another individual that to some extent organized, directed, and instructed the two couriers in this case, Jonathan Blake. But it is also unequivocal that after the two couriers left the United States in this case, they were under the exclusive quote-unquote control of Jonathan Hank, in that they never communicated again with Jonathan Blake. Jonathan Hank provided them with a place to stay. Jonathan Hank went out and purchased the ecstasy. Jonathan Hank saw to it that the ecstasy was packaged and actually taped to the courier's bodies in such a way to try to ensure the success of this venture. Jonathan Hank told them where to go to get tickets to fly back to the United States. And last but not least, Jonathan Hank told them that upon returning to the United States, they were to save a portion of the pills for him. In essence, Jonathan Hank was directing individuals who actually were working for him. They were taking on the burden of transporting the drugs to the United States so that he could deflect attention away from himself. And that is the purpose of a courier. A courier is the employee of an organization. And though an argument could be made that Jonathan Blake was the kingpin of the organization, under the case law, if there is an individual that can be construed as a leader of the organization, that does not mean that some other individual cannot be found to be a supervisor. And it's the government's position that James Hanks did, in fact, supervise these individuals. In the event that all of the courier's instructions had come directly from Jonathan Blake and James Hanks' input into this enterprise was simply ministerial, then the couriers would have arrived in Amsterdam and not been able to complete their venture. James Hank made it possible for the venture to happen. He made it possible for the drugs to make it back into the United States. Jonathan Blake could not put up the defendants in Amsterdam. He could not purchase the drugs in Amsterdam. He could not tape them to the defendant's body in such a way to try to get them through airport security and customs in Amsterdam. And he could not direct them in Amsterdam on when to return, which was an important fact, because the point of having couriers, again, is to deflect attention away from the principals. And therefore, in directing the couriers in this case to take a particular flight and leave at a particular time, it deflected attention away from Mr. Hank. What is very telling about Hank's position in this organization falls on two instances. Number one, he told the couriers what to do with the drugs when they returned to the United States. Number two, when a monkey wrench was thrown into the operation in that the couriers didn't bring enough money into Amsterdam in order to, as Hank believed, buy enough ecstasy tablets, and it became necessary for additional money to be wired into Amsterdam, what did Hank do? In essence, he hired them to accept the wire transfers. He asked them, will you accept for additional money the wire transfers? And in doing so, he made the choice not to receive the money on his own behalf and deflected the attention away from him and towards the couriers. And in a way, he made the two couriers his quote-unquote employees for that particular aspect of the conspiracy. It is true he didn't exercise complete control over these two individuals, but as the case law says, he doesn't have to exercise complete control over them. He can organize them, he can direct them, he can guide them. Now, in turning to the second issue before the court, whether the district court plainly erred in directing the defendant to undergo drug treatment, which may include random urine testing, comma, at the direction of the probation officer. If you look at the judgment and commitment order, the district court made two provisions here for concerning narcotics use for the period of the defendant's supervised release. Number one, he made a provision for the mandatory urine testing as provided in Section 3583D, and providing for a urine drop within a certain period of time following the defendant's release from incarceration, and then two urine drops thereafter. Secondly, he specifically stated as a special condition of the defendant's probation that he was to undergo drug treatment, comma, which may include urine testing, comma, at the direction of probation. The fact that he broke up these two directions into two sections makes it very clear that the second directive was a special condition of probation that was provided for under a totally different section of the U.S. Code. Section 3583D, on the one hand, provides for mandatory urine testing, and case law has held that the mandatory urine testing under that section must be under the direction of the court as opposed to the probation officer. And also Section 3583D gives the court the power to order a number of different special conditions which are set forth in Section 3583B, including but not limited to drug treatment. And you'll see both in the transcript and in the judgment and commitment order that the court was very careful to include the drug treatment aspect under the special conditions section. And as the Eighth Circuit has held, the order of drug treatment at the direction of the probation office is a proper delegation of that duty pursuant to Section 3563B. All in all, the district court committed no error, much less any clear error, in determining that Jonathan Blake was a manager or supervisor pursuant to Section 3B1.1B, and the district court did not commit any plain error in directing that James Hank undergo the special condition of drug treatment, which might include random urine testing. So I will ask the court to affirm the district court's decision, and unless the panel has any further questions for me,
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. York have? Yes, time has expired. Well, in that case, Mr. York, I do want to thank you for your service to the court as an appointed counsel in this case, and I'd also like to thank your law firm for having taken on the case. The court very much appreciates the assistance. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case for their excellent briefs, and the case will be taken under advisement. We have finished the call for the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.